But you know what? You can try and separate yourself from the yuck and the muck, but these guys are part of our history, and we're learning that both at the macroscopic level and even at the DNA level, the genetic level.
And then we have to make tough choices about which microbes to be friends with and which ones maybe to try to scrub out of our lives.
Yeah, and it's kind of tough because how do I tell the good guys from the bad guys? They don't wear hats.
Thanks to the larger-than-life talent that is always with us and helps us produce this show, Gary Niederhoff, Barbara Vance, and our intern, Aaron Ross.
Also, thanks to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David, Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, where scientists study the origin and nature of life. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to With All Our Mites. And if you crave more Big Picture Science, if you're itching for more, you'll find it in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
If you're a podcast listener, but you prefer listening to over-the-air radio, because after all, your face mites can't hear the show if you're listening with earbuds, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
And if you listen via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review of the show. And if you have other comments, criticisms, or suggestions, well, throw in some faint praise and email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org. Who has more gunk on their face, Seth or me?
It looks like you both have similar amounts of gunk, but I'm hoping that Seth has got a lot more mites. I just have a feeling about it.
What is it, some comment on my lifestyle?
This is Tamara Bedricki, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn, where the music rocks.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
This is Joe, host of Big Band Broadway and Beyond, wishing you and yours a Merry Christmas and a happy, healthy, and prosperous New Year.
Season greetings. You are listening to a pre-recorded Impact program. The following does not necessarily reflect the views of Henry Ford College, the WHF staff, and members. All right, once again, good afternoon, and this is Betty Daniels, and I want to welcome you to Impact. And in the studio, I have Sandy with us, and I want Sandy to give us her full name and title and the organization that she represents.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Sandy North, and I'm the Executive Director for the Remember Me Quilt Project of Michigan, the Innocent Faces of Gun Violence.
All right. Now, tell us a little bit of what is Remember Me
Quilt Project.
Quilt Project, okay. How did you come to be, and who are you, and what is it that you do, exactly that you do?
Sure. I was the coordinator for the Wayne County Organizing for Action Gun Violence Prevention Committee. Mm-hmm. And this background is important to understand how we got to where we are today. The committee did all kinds of activities to prevent gun violence, rallies, petition signing, phone banking. And after each event, we would come back and we would talk about whether or not the event was successful. And always the turnout was great. But when we talked about did we have a real true impact, the answer was no. Nobody felt that they were really having an impact. And we immediately identified two things that we needed to do. One was to change from the horrific statistics, because the statistics are terrible. You know, 30,000 people die of gun violence every year. The mass shootings, but their numbers, and we knew we needed to change from the numbers to the real actual people. The second thing we felt was that most of the statistics were from other areas of the country, you know, Colorado and Sandy Hook, etc., and that they were not representative of what was happening in Michigan. So we wanted to change to actual people and the people that we lose every single day on our streets in Michigan. And we didn't have a vehicle. We sat right. talking about, okay, now we know what we need to do.
All right.
But
all
what's
right.
the vehicle that we do that through? And we were lucky. One of the members on the committee and one of the founding members of the Quilt Project was a curator of the Henry Ford Estate in Dearborn. And she said, how about a quilt? And we all went, of course. Why didn't we think of that several months ago?
All right.
This model didn't fit with what OFA, Organizing for Action, wanted to do. They had a different model. And so with their blessing and ours, we said goodbye and we started the Remember Me Quilt Project of Michigan,
right.
The Innocent Faces of Gun Violence.
Okay. And I, although we have a listening audience, Sandy brought one of the quilts that she had displayed at the consortium where I first met her. And it's originally we were going to set it up in the studio because she was, when I was making the arrangements for the interview, she was saying that it helps that if you are able to view the quilt during the interview because it has, gives you a sense of what it is you're talking about. It kind of gives you we call it a mental mindset, if that's that be the word. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a good idea. And but Sandy and I have a similar energies, right? So I thought it would be good that if we had the, instead of having the quilt displayed directly just for us, I thought it would be good if we could share it with the community that's outside of this particular radio the studio itself. So Sandy and I, we set it up, and but where it is not in the studio directly. It's outside the studio, and we're looking through the studio window into the main corridor that of the student activities building. So as Sandy and I are talking, she and I can look at the quilt, and as she says, there are faces. So the statistic has been translated into a face. And as we're talking, I'm noticing how students are stopping and looking. Mm-hmm. And observing, and that's exactly what you wouldn't want from the quilt. Is that correct?
Absolutely, and that's the response we had because we exhibited at the Democratic conference this last week, the political issues,
okay.
And we had so many students stop and look at them, but then want to come over and ask more questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed with the student body from the universities that were here,
mm-hmm.
and how many young men came. And mm-hmm. how they identified because of the age of the population.
Right, right. And the consortium she's talking about is the consortium for, I guess it's political science students.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having a caucus where they were making their voices heard, and they had different issues that they were working on. So, and these are the type of people that you want to get the information out to, is that correct?
Absolutely. And the project was started as a... created as a nonpartisan
mm-hmm.
and nonprofit 501c3,
mm-hmm.
and the purpose was to educate the public about who was really being killed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to two misconceptions that we found as we started the project.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, people who live in inner cities and areas of high crime often said to us, people in suburbia don't care about us and care what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
The other misconception was from people in the suburbs who thought that if you were getting murdered, that probably you were a substance abuser, a drug dealer, or a gang member. Those two things could not be more incorrect. The public felt that. And you know what happened? We don't even have to say anything because when we show the quilts, people look at that, and on those quilts, they can see that it's everybody. Gun violence is affecting everyone.
And if those of us who have been watching the news, we're going to see more and more of that, those who are dying from gun violence are all over.
Absolutely.
Okay? It has no, they does not discriminate, not only against race, creed, gender, or what have you, area.
Area, absolutely.
Okay.
The other thing is that we are not opposed to the Second Amendment,
mm-hmm.
that we do not support any candidates or any specific issues. The goal is to let people know who is being murdered so that, and it truly, the quilts touch people's hearts,
mm-hmm.
which changes their mind,
okay.
which will determine their actions.
All right, now you use the term murdered. What about accidental gun violence?
For example, we don't put suicide victims on here.
All right.
And it breaks our heart because people ask us sometimes if we can include somebody. I was presenting to an interfaith group, and one of the ministers raised his hand and said, "What about people who die in the service?" And the reality is, first of all, you cannot be on our quilt if you're a felon. There's mm-hmm. are innocent people. They're not felons.
All right.
You can't be on the quilt if you have been shot in the commission of a crime. And we do not put people in the quilt who have an occupation that puts their lives in danger because they've taken that occupation on is what they want to do.
Okay.
They're not innocent victims.
Okay. Do you get the challenge that people say, let's you know, to the children are in the home, okay, and they're playing Russian roulette, that type of thing. Those children would not go in the quilt?
Yes, they would. Yeah.
They would go, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. They aren't committing a crime. They are innocent victims if somebody has left a gun around.
Okay.
And I think what we're doing when the public sees this, and we'll talk about the victims in a second, but right now I just want to say the youngest victim on our quilt was a 9-month-old baby, you know.
Yes.
And we'll talk more about him in a minute.
All right. Now, there are different groups, chapters? Because I know when I saw you, you had about 3 or 4 different quilts that were being displayed. Right now we're looking at the quilt, and the quilt that we're looking at now is from where?
Okay, first of all, because 3 founding members were part of that original Committee on Gun Violence.
Mm-hmm.
2 of them are Dearborn residents.
<All right. laughs>
That has a lot to do with this. But anyhow, we decided that it's a statewide project. But when you first start, to tell you too, the listening audience needs to know, we're just in our second year.
Okay.
This is just our second year, and it's had such an impact.
Right.
So, but anyhow, so when we started, we did what we call the Tri-County area.
All right.
And people could submit photographs of their loved one, which
right.
we would put on a quilt.
Right.
Towards the end of our first year, we decided that we wanted to branch out statewide, so we went to Genesee County, and so the first 3 quilts are Tri-County area, the
okay.
fourth quilt is Flint, the
okay.
city of Flint. They're all from the city of Flint
right.
on that quilt.
I'm going to pause here for just a second, okay?
Hey guys, Bill the Big Dog talking to you. I'd like to wish you all a Merry Christmas and the happiest of New Year's, and when the New Year comes, may it be the best you've ever had. See ya.
All right, now we were talking about who could be on the quilts. So you were going to give me some more information about who can be on the quilts and how the victims.
Who are the victims?
Yes.
Because you mentioned, Betty, when you started this broadcast that, you know, that gun violence doesn't know anything. It crosses both genders, all races,
right.
occupations, social, educational, vocational areas.
Locations, yeah, we did.
Everything, you know. But I need to say that more of our victims on the quilts come from the inner cities, and more of them come from the ages of about 14 to 24, 26. And there's a reason for that. The reason is not that they aren't as innocent as the 9-month-old baby. The reason is that they're young men, most of them, and they feel invincible and nothing's going to happen to them, and they go out into their neighborhood, and the neighborhoods aren't as safe as the suburban areas, although anybody could be shot, and I'll give you a couple examples. But that's why there are more young African-American men on the quilts. And they should be allowed out. Their cities should be, and streets should be safe so that they can go out the same as anybody in other suburban area and not worry that they might be killed that night.
Okay, now, when we started off, we were saying that we wanted to take the statistics out of that. Does the statistics support what you just said about being there's more death in the inner city as opposed to the suburban area?
Yeah, but it's more important than the numbers, again, that we refer to the people. So when you look at our quilts,
mm-hmm.
and you have all 4 quilts, we have 4 done at this point,
all right.
or they're up across an altar for Fallen Angels Night, and you see them, and you look, you see many more young African-American men, and
okay.
that is the reason that they are not as safe on the streets
okay.
as somebody in another area. But it doesn't mean that gun violence can't strike anybody in any area.
Okay.
And I'd like to go into the victims and show you that.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, the youngest victim on our quilts is a 9-month-old baby.
All right.
Can't be much more innocent than that.
Right.
The baby was sleeping on his sofa in his living room.
All right.
When there was a drive-by shooting with a car with an AK-47, they put over 24 bullets in the front of that baby's house, and
mm-hmm.
he was murdered.
Right.
So then there are other ones in other ages. We have a lot of children on our quilts, and we have a little girl, 14, who is walking home from middle school, and she stopped at a mom-and-pop store to get a bag of Cheetos.
All right.
And as she proceeded to walk, she was killed by a ricochet bullet.
All right.
We have an identical twin who was riding in the back seat of his car, his asleep. His twin brother was in the front with his dad, and somebody just for kicks put a bullet through the trunk of the car and killed that little six-year-old twin.
Okay. Do you have, in your work or in your efforts, are there collaborations with the police department, with city government, or what?
Oh, all over. And we'll get a little bit more into presentations, but we again thank the Michigan Association of Chiefs of Police that had a three-day conference in Grand Rapids, and we were asked to exhibit our quilts there, where 350 police chiefs could see the quilts. We have similar goals and agendas and fears. So,
okay, Sandy and I paused because I had a brilliant idea as she was talking, because as I said, we're looking at people looking at the quilt as we were doing this interview, and I was noticing that people were stopping, asking information, and we have someone out there to sit and monitor the quilt because we don't want it to walk away. But I thought it would be a good idea to get a sign-up sheet of so people who wanted to get additional information, I can do that. And because as I said, as we were doing an interview, I saw two or just groups of people stopping, asking information, and from our monitor, and the person they really wanted to talk to is here in the studio. Okay. Okay, all right. So now you were talking about picking up there where you were talking.
Right, how we make the quilt. So the idea of the project is to do a memorial quilt that becomes an educational vehicle to let the public know who's being murdered. Mm-hmm. So we involve as many people as we can in the actual construction of the quilts. Mm-hmm. So the family gives us the photograph, we make the block. When we get enough blocks for a quilt, then we have a volunteer quilting group take it and piece it together.
Okay. So any person who has are in the process of making a quilt, they can take on a project? Is that what you're saying?
Right. And it doesn't take very long, because any quilter out there knows that the main thing in a quilting is two things. It's creating the blocks that are very intricate, and in this case, we're giving them the blocks.
All right.
And the second thing is after they piece it, which is relatively quick, to actually quilt the piece. And ours are not quilted, and I'll tell you what we do and why we do it.
All right.
But it you know, several of these have been done in 3 days by three people.
Okay.
You know, and they're so enthusiastic, and we appreciate them so much, because if it wasn't for the families giving us the photo and the quilters who piece the quilt together, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing.
All right.
So when they piece the quilt, it comes back to us. And remember, we're a Michigan project, the statewide project.
Yes.
But we started in a geographic smaller area.
Right.
So if we're going to Genesee County, all right, the victims are from Flint.
All right.
If that situation exists, then we can call the families back in to a central location and have them tie their loved one's square. If we look out here at the quilt, we'll see at the corners of the white square with the person's face on it,
all right,
there's a little yarn tied knot there.
All right.
When we do this, this is one of the most emotional things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
When the families come in, they have not seen their loved one on a quilt yet.
Right.
And it's across a big table. And some of them bring Marcel Jackson's family. He has six children. Five of his six children were there to help piece it that night. Or tie it. And so they come in. And typically, and I want the audience to understand the horrific loss and how they feel. So when they come in, typically, the first thing they do is go over and touch their loved one's face.
Okay.
You know, because it's what they're feeling, and they may be crying, there may be tears.
Right.
But shortly, we give them a piece of yarn that is on a needle, and we say, okay, now you're going to finish this quilt for your loved one. And you begin to see them change. You begin to see them smiles and happy that this is good. And they take the yarn and they put it down and bring it back up, cut it off and tie it. And they go around and do that. It was this quilt that we're looking at. We've grown so much and learned so much from our families and from the quilters and the people that exhibit our quilts.
Right.
At this particular time, this was only our second quilt, and one of the mothers came up to me with her needle in the yarn in it, hanging down, and she said, I know I probably shouldn't ask this. I can hardly tell the story. She said, but would you mind if I had a piece of the yarn from the quilt John Paul was on, I have a little box that I put his things in at home. Could I have a piece of yarn? I told everybody, stop. Before you go over there and take the biggest piece of that yarn that you want. So she took that home. And driving home myself, I thought, oh my goodness, if they're that happy and about a piece of yarn from their quilt, why couldn't we take the fabric of that same quilt and make a little square and then tie it, and before they leave, they will get a little square from the quilt that their loved one is on.
All right. Okay.
Now, the other thing that goes along with that is when they, after they tie it, every family gets to stand up and hold the quilt up high.
All right.
And we take a picture of them holding their loved one's quilt.
All right.
And we make copies of that, and we send that to them in the mail. So they now have a little square that's a piece of the quilt.
Mm-hmm.
They have a photograph of them holding the quilt of their loved one.
All right. What becomes, now are these quilts, you said, how many do you have at this point?
We have four, and we're working on our fifth.
All right. What's going to be the eventual resting place for these quilts?
Okay, when we work with families, we let everybody know that if you decide to have your loved one put on a quilt, that they become part of the Remember Me Quilt Project because it's a traveling exhibit.
Okay.
So let me give you an idea. We don't have nearly enough quilts in terms of what we need to do. We wish that at some point we wouldn't have a need to do anymore.
Right, okay.
But there was one weekend that we had four quilts, and they were in four different locations, in different counties even, where we were having things done and making a difference.
Right.
So we could use more quilts, and we would like more people to be represented on quilts, their loved ones, so that they're not forgotten.
All right. Okay, now, as I'm talking to Sandy, if the audience kind of like thinks I'm kind of like fading out, I'm just observing people, observing the quilt, all right? And it is a attention gatherer. It's a subtle way, and people, yes, she's getting excited because someone has
came by, shook hands, and is now pointing to the quilt.
Yes, okay, and it grabs you, right? You know, you see the faces, and as I said, I'm watching the people walk by, and some people just can't walk by. It's like they, you know, seeing the faces, they have to stop.
He just put his hand on his heart.
Yes, okay. This is the type of impact that these quilts are making. I'm so glad we put it outside instead of here.
Oh, my gosh.
We're sharing. Okay. And now, if the audience wanted to get the same experience, how would they go about, you know, being able to visualize this quilt? Maybe some different community organizations want to, you know, have a display of the quilt. How would they go about doing all that?
Right. Okay. So, first of all, you know, anybody, we go anywhere in any place for displays or presentations.
Mm-hmm.
So our groups could be from anywhere from 20 or 30 people all the way up to, we've had several with 350, 250. Our largest group was 3,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we also do presentations at Dearborn Homecoming, where they pull in 120 to 150,000 people. Now they don't all come to the community tent, but the opportunity is there for people to see them. So if people have an organization that we do interfaith groups, churches, mosques, temples, we do civic groups.
Mm-hmm.
If you work for a corporation, we'll come and do the corporation. We want the broadest base that we can so that they can speak up for these people and
all
be their voice.
Okay. We touched on it earlier where you said that you legislation, lobbying, that type of thing. Is that part of what your organization does, or are you the catalyst to these kind of things?
It's not what our organization does. We're a 501c3, which means any donations, if people out there want to help us, we really need, we run by volunteer, completely by volunteers and donations that we get.
Mm-hmm.
But if people want to, I'm sorry, your question?
The question is, if people wanted to, you know, have the quilt presented or displayed.
So they would contact us. We have a website and a Facebook, which we'll give at the end of this.
No, we're going to give it twice. Going to give it here
twice?
Now.
Okay. I'm ready for you.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so the website is www.rememberme.quiltproject, real easy, .org.
All right. Okay.
And facebook.com/rememberme.quiltproject of Michigan.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Now I can give a phone number too. That is
that's
the project
because
that's the easiest way. Because if they don't get this call and I'll answer the phone.
All right.
313-434-8616.
Okay. What kind? Now you said you're 2 years old. Is that correct?
Yeah. We're so proud of our first year. We're not quite 2 years old, but. When we started the project, let me give you an idea of some of those conferences and things.
Okay.
Some that stand out in my mind besides the Michigan Associations of Chiefs of Police. We talk a lot about working with church and school groups and interfaith groups. And this one was done by the Dearborn Area Interfaith Network.
Mm-hmm.
They sponsored an event to celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King,
mm-hmm.
and it was hosted by the Islamic House of Wisdom,
okay.
which, you know, if people have never had a chance to go to an interfaith activity, something like this, to celebrate one of the greatest Americans that ever lived, who was also murdered by a gun, everybody from all faiths were there. All of the mayors were there. The chiefs of police were there. And we were asked if we would show our quilts but then do a presentation, which we did. So this shows the broad base of support and how we can get community to come together to make a difference in gun violence.
All right.
And that was the question you asked. Do we support specific legislation or try to get it? And the answer is no. What we want to do is everybody that was at that and any of these other events to then come forward or their group start legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I have opinions on stuff, but as a project, we don't.
All right, so then your objective or your goal is to create awareness or put a face?
Yeah, it's more than create awareness. I think it's changing a paradigm.
Okay.
You know, so everybody is stuck in what they perceived, and I started about the misconceptions in the beginning,
yes,
and they're stuck in that, and so it's changing a paradigm to know who we really are losing, what impact on the families and us,
right?
And get them ready so that they can go. We also do marches. We have, besides our quilts, we have big signs with the person's face on it. Each innocent victim has a sign.
Right.
We marched at the Silence the Violence March in the spring in pouring down rain.
Okay.
And there were like 250 people there, and we had 60 of our signs,
mm-hmm.
and they went immediately. People grabbed one and said, I'll take a sign. Everybody wants to be a part of preventing and stopping gun violence.
All right.
They need a vehicle to do it.
All right.
And this pulls people together so that they can.
Okay.
And they have a voice for these people.
All right. I think when you and I were, when I first met you, you were talking about you worked with MAD. Was that another group that you worked with? Or type of groups that...
I mean, there's so many groups that we work with, and I almost hate to single some out because they're so supportive, but Open Arms with St. John's Providence Hospital.
Right.
They counsel these families who have lost a loved one.
Okay.
We work with Crime Stoppers.
All right.
We work with all kinds of church groups. We are supported by Moms Demand Action, even though we
that
don't. Moms of Murdered Children. The list goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to say that we're nonpartisan, and I don't think I said this earlier.
No, you did. Okay.
But about 1 week, we displayed our quilts and talked to First Lady Sue Snyder.
No, you didn't.
Okay. And then the next week, we did Congresswoman Debbie Dingell,
mm-hmm.
and they were both marvelous. And they both believe that gun violence crosses all issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to tell you that the family, Marcel Johnson's family, was there. And she went down and talked to each one of them and told them how sorry they had lost their dad and got down on her knees for the little children.
Mm-hmm.
And the one little girl said to her, this is the quilt we're looking at.
All right.
She said to her, to First Lady Snyder, would you like to see my daddy?
Okay.
You could have heard a pin drop.
Yes.
And bless her heart, Sue Snyder said, I really would. Your daddy on that quilt? And she grabbed her hand and they walked over. And as they were looking, she pointed to the picture of her daddy. About having a voice.
Yes.
And Sue said, did you tie your daddy's quilt? And this little 6-year-old beamed and said, yes, I did.
Okay.
So nothing can be more impactful than something like that.
Okay. I think I had asked you earlier, what's the final recipes for the quilts? And we did quite, you're 2 years old.
Yes.
You have 4 quilts. Where are these quilts going to wind up eventually?
I think they're going to continue to be a travel exhibit.
All right.
Our first year, we had, in our 1 year, and it was our first year, we had 47 presentations and exhibits.
All right.
That's almost one a week. That's unheard of.
Right.
This past March, just March alone, we had 11.
All right.
Okay. As we grow and go across the state, people are asking us, may we borrow one quilt for a specific convention or conference? Let me give you an excellent example of how we can facilitate other places.
All right.
The Michigan Episcopal Diocese had a convention 2 springs ago. We were brand new.
Right.
And they asked, could we borrow one of their quilts? Because the church, Christ Church in Grosse Pointe Episcopal, had a resolution for Episcopal churches to stop gun violence, to do what they needed to do.
Right.
And they were presenting the resolution at the state convention.
Okay.
They hung up one of our quilts there.
All right.
They said they felt that it had a major difference because they could see it. But I know that resolution was going to pass anyhow. But anyhow, they now are working with other Episcopal churches across the state.
Right.
That resolution ends when, I'm paraphrasing, I as a person, my family, and my church promise that we will do everything we can to stop gun violence.
Right.
It is a powerful document.
All right.
And now we just did the Presbyterian women.
Right.
And we had churches from all over the state there, and they have an overture.
All right.
That they were developing about the same time as the Episcopals were.
Right.
But neither one knew the other one was doing it. So I see our group as a facilitator as we work across the state of making people aware and putting people together that can partner.
All right.
Because I'm a firm believer that you can make a difference. I can make a difference.
Yes.
The person listening can make a difference.
Right.
But if we want to make a change, if we want to make a change, then we all need to come together.
Okay.
And I think this project is one of the ones that has the ability to do that. And part of it is because we're not taking a position on candidates or specific legislation.
Right, right. So we talked about different groups, people who, let's say, a quilting group.
Mm-hmm.
And they would want to work on a quilt for this. How does that work?
Okay. They can contact me.
Okay.
We're going to give it again.
Yes.
But if you would like, if you have a loved one and you want them on the quilt, there's no cost as long as they're not a felon.
All right.
And they were shot.
Right.
We've asked people, somebody got stabbed to death, my heart breaks, but that this quilt project has a purpose to change gun violence.
Right.
So if you lost a loved one,
right,
we would really love to add them on one of our next quilts.
All right.
If you would like to piece a quilt, the next quilt's going to be pieced by the General Henry Dearborn Historical Quilt Society.
All right.
And then we'll be looking for the next one after that.
All right.
If you want to give a donation, or if you want a presentation, you know, we present to a church group, but maybe 6 people in that church group belong to Kiwanis or another organization,
right,
or they own a business and all they ask us to come out. It's all word of mouth.
All right.
So here's the best way to reach me, and you can get more information.
Okay.
And that is 313-4-8616. If you want to see more and see the quilts, please go to our website, Okay. And the website will can get you to Facebook. But
that
the
was one of the questions I had written down. Go ahead.
Yeah. The website, www.rememberme.quiltproject.org, and that's real easy to remember, and when you go there you can get to the Facebook and other things.
All right. 2 years old, what do you see yourself a year from now?
We have some really poignant things happen to us, and it makes us want to have that happen.
All right.
We were just at Messiah Church for Fallen Angels Night.
Right.
Charles Duff was there, and he was presenting, and he turned and pointed to the four quilts on the altar, and he said, "We need to work until we don't have more people to put on quilts."
Okay.
So, yeah, that is one. The second thing is we have really high hopes because this quilt project is so impactful that it will be replicated in other states.
All right.
When we talk about, yeah, we can make a difference in Michigan, but we don't want to make a difference in Michigan. We want to make a difference in the nation so we can change it. That's the same thing I'm talking about with groups all being involved. We need this project replicated in other states so that together we can make change, not just a difference.
All right. Very good. There's a poem that you have.
It is.
Okay.
Sometimes I have a hard time finishing it.
All right.
But every event that we do, we end with a poem because it represents what the project is about, what the families feel, and what all the people, all the volunteers, we would not survive without our volunteers. It's called "I Am a Person." It's dedicated to the families of the victims of gun violence. I was a person shot down not to be. I was a person. Please don't forget me. I was a person with a loving family. I was a person. Please don't forget me. I was a person. A future not to be. I was a person. Please don't forget me. I am a person, not a number you see. I am a person. Please don't forget me. I am a person on a quilt for all to see. I am a person. You will remember me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that was Sandy North from the
Remember Me Quilt Project of Michigan.
Okay. And if you want to get further information, you can contact her again and give your telephone number again.
Sure. 313-434-8616. And thank you for having us on the station.
And thank you very much. And you have been listening to Impact at WHFR Radio.
With so many choices of music on the radio, sadly there's very little for the true sound of jazz. Good news, however, the Play It By Ear show comes your way every Sunday from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m., bringing you a wide variety of jazz, from Louis Armstrong to Joe Zawinul. That's the Play It By Ear show every Sunday from 10 until 1, only on the station Making Waves, WHFR.FM 89.3. 30 years, and we're just getting started.
WHFR, you're 30 years old? You don't even look a day over 29. Happy birthday. 30 years in, and we're just getting started. WHFR Dearborn.
Good afternoon. This is Betty, and I want to welcome you to Impact. And we have Harrison here with us at the studio. And Harrison, give your full name and the organizations you're representing.
My name is Harrison Shelby, and I'm representing the Hawk's Nest at Henry Ford College.
All right. Now, what is the Hawk's Nest, or who is the Hawk's Nest? Tell us about the Hawk's Nest.
The Hawk's Nest is a student food pantry here at the college, and this is the initiative that the president saw fit to have a service for students.
Okay, when you say the president, who's the president? President who?
Dr. Jensen.
Okay, all right. Harrison, okay, again, so you are who with the Hawk's Nest?
I am the team leader for the Hawk's Nest.
Okay, all right. So the president of Henry Ford College, and right?
Yes.
Okay. How did the idea of the Hawk's Nest come about? So did he ask you about it, or how did you get to be where you are with this? What's going on?
Under his leadership, he saw that there was a need for this service. Mm-hmm. And the vice president of student affairs, Dr. Lisa Kapru, mm-hmm. Was tasked with forming a committee.
Mm-hmm.
And the committee met, and they decided that this position should be a student running the operation day-to-day
mm-hmm.
For this new food pantry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they came about.
All right. So how did you get involved in this?
The student activities director here asked me, would this be something I was interested in? She told me a little bit about...
That's Cassandra Fluker?
Yes.
Okay.
She told me a little bit about what they're trying to start here.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me what I want to interview for this. And All she right. thought I was a good candidate for.
Mm-hmm.
And then... It's been ever since then.
Okay, now, so this has been how, over what length of time has all this come about?
Over the past month.
Over the past month, okay. So you've been involved in other student activities, or are you with a certain organization, or just what?
Provide emergency food for students
mm-hmm.
In need.
Mm-hmm.
Students will be able to visit the center once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Students are students that are enrolled in at least one credit are mm-hmm. eligible for services,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be shopping style set up, so you can take what you need, and
mm-hmm.
We'll also have, besides non-perishable food items, also mm-hmm. personal care items
mm-hmm.
for students as
okay.
well.
Okay, now where's it going to be exactly?
The Hawk's Nest is going to be located in the Administrative Services and Conference Center
mm-hmm.
On the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
The grand opening is actually December 10th.
Okay. And all right, so when we go to there, where is it going to be? In this lobby? In the, you know, just where are we talking about in that building?
Near the entrance where the 48 UAW mm-hmm. office,
mm-hmm.
There's going to be new signs going to be with the Hawk's Nest mm-hmm. logo. Mm-hmm. Actually, a student designed the logo.
Okay.
In the graphic design program.
All right. Okay. So this is a student involvement all from the Jump Street. How did you get to the graphic department to come up with your logo?
The committee met and decided that we needed to be form this brand, since this was a new initiative, and
mm-hmm.
It was a competition in the graphic design program,
mm-hmm.
and there were several logos that were designed and submitted,
mm-hmm.
And then the committee met and myself
mm-hmm.
and chose the top three.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that top three, we decided on one.
Okay. And who else is on this committee?
Cassandra Flugner.
Fluker.
Okay. Rochelle Taylor.
All right.
I think her name is Brenda from the SOS office.
Okay.
And there are a couple other.
All right.
I haven't met the whole entire
Okay.
committee.
All right. Okay. Now, so what have you been doing since you have been involved with this project?
I've been tasked with getting the word out about the Hawk's Nest and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, I met with student clubs,
mm-hmm.
the student leaders, and trying to organize food drives.
Mm-hmm.
And also this week, also met with the student athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, they host their own food drives.
Right.
And they're going to get involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Taylor is actually the athletic director here. Is my mm-hmm. supervisor.
Okay.
Direct supervisor.
All right. Okay. So she's a supervisor over the Hawk's Nest?
Yes.
All right. And during your presentation to the student leaders, what was that about?
Basically, let them know what the Hawk's Nest, where it will be located, the hours,
mm-hmm.
How they can get involved. how they can volunteer mm-hmm. and organize food drives mm-hmm. and any ideas, because we really want this the student leaders to really have their partners.
Right. And what was their response?
They were very receptive to the idea and thought it was obviously needed. Mm-hmm. This has been an issue that has been kind of under the radar, not just on this campus, but across the nation. There's been a rise in this kind of initiative for mm-hmm. food pantries.
Mm-hmm.
I know looking at some recent research in like the Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. and there's over 200 food banks across the nation now.
All right.
And actually, Michigan is leading in this initiative. Michigan State was actually the first student-run food pantry.
Right.
Started here.
Okay. Do you know how long ago that was?
That was in the early 90s.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So they've been around a little while.
Yes. And they've actually have now set up a nonprofit that also supports other food pantries and food banks on college campuses.
All right. So are you affiliated now with that, or will you in the future be affiliated with them?
That's another one of my tasks. Is to, it's free for colleges to be a part of it,
mm-hmm.
To get that support and mm-hmm. Collaborate with other food pantries.
Okay. What is your title now? Are you the director, or are you? I mean, what's your
I'm the team leader for the Hawk's Nest. Mm-hmm. I supervise all the student assistants and volunteers.
All right, and how many people are we talking about?
We'll be starting hiring in the winter semester.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have
Okay, and so is this like a co-op, or is this a work study? I mean, just how is it?
Yes, it's through the co-op.
It's through the co-op. Okay, mm-hmm. All right. And what positions are we looking at? For this, what co-op positions are we looking at, or have you finalized that yet?
My position is a co-op
team lead. Oh, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And so there'd be work study,
mm-hmm.
And also volunteers.
All right. So now, co-op and work study are two different types of programs. Is it a co-op or is it a work study, or will you have both?
There would be both.
There will be both. And how many people are we talking about?
I don't know the exact
number. Okay. If you had to get a ballpark, how many people you think you might be talking about? Or are you, because it's only 1 month old, it's still evolving as to how many people you're going to be using?
Yeah, I think we're going to take a look at that and see how many is going to be needed. And
okay. All right. So where is this pantry? And like I said, it's going to start in the fall, the winter semester. Is that what the first one's going to be? Or is it going to start earlier?
The winter semester is when the center is going to be officially up and running.
All right.
The grand opening is December 10th, and I also have to make a presentation with the foundation board.
Okay. All right. So, and that's going to be as part of some more of getting your the funds to operationalize this?
Yes.
All right. The location where this food pantry is going to be, what size are we talking about? Is it as big as this? Is it like a store, or is it like the bookstore? Can you give our listeners an idea?
It's Have a pretty nice size.
Okay. Is it as large as the bookstore? The college bookstore?
It's probably half of that.
Half of that. Okay. All right. And there'd be like aisles, like you're actually going to a grocery store type of thing?
That's the vision of how we want to have it set up.
All right. Who is helping you to try to lay out how this is going to be, the actual physical kind of, are other student organizations or people working with you on that?
The committee and also student government.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also wanted to take visits to nearby food pantries
mm-hmm.
at U of M Dearborn and also Schoolcraft College.
Oh, okay. All right. So all these colleges already have their food pantries. Is that it?
Yes.
All right. And working with this, what has been some of the things that's been, that you have, that's that impacted you as you've been involved with all this?
I'm currently in the community leadership program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's initially why I wanted to be a part of this and take mm-hmm. this take on this role mm-hmm. as the team leader, because mm-hmm. I do think it's a social justice issue mm-hmm. For students not in this food crisis.
Okay.
So it's really near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. I know the impacts of not being able to being hungry, and it's going to affect your academic performance and right. attendance, and
right.
Also your personal health and well-being. Mm-hmm. And I'm really just committed to making sure that the students that are in real need are able to utilize this service.
All right. Have people, are you going to be signing people up during your grand opening, or just, you know, what's going to occur at the grand opening?
At this time, I think the grand opening, I know that that day I have to make a presentation with the foundation board mm-hmm. and the president and other dignitaries will be there for the ribbon cutting ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
We do want to have shelves, the shelf stocked.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we're going to be ready for, you know, for students to utilize the services.
All right. So the things that are going to be in the pantry are donated items, or how are you, where are we getting this, the commodities, if you will?
Okay. The initial, we're going to purchase, there's a budget
mm-hmm.
To purchase non-perishable food items, and then to maintain that, we're going to really solicit the community, both on campus and off campus, for mm-hmm. donations.
Mm-hmm. All right. And that's part of what you're going to be doing when you're visiting the other colleges, see how they stock their food pantries. Is that going to be one of the things that you're going to be doing?
Yes. I know a lot of the more established food pantries also in partnership with cleaners and mm-hmm. a few other agencies like that.
All right. Do you see you, I know, and I know I might be putting you on the spot because it's somewhat of new things, but do you see yourself as being in competition with organizations such as Gleaners and stuff, or with?
No. Gleaners has it where you can become an agency
mm-hmm.
where you're able to buy items at a fairly discounted rate
right.
through right. them, and they actually have other services to help food pantries, campus food pantries.
All right, okay. Now the pantry, students, do they are they is this where they go? You know, they come and they have a need, and they just go through the store and get what they need. And do they have to make a contribution, or is there, you know, I think you said when you started off, it's once a month that they have an opportunity to come to the pantry?
They can come once a week.
Once, okay. Clarify that. Once a week. All right. And when they come, are they bringing certain, is it according to whatever money they have, or just what's going on with that?
The only requirement is that they be registered for at least one credit.
Okay.
They don't have to provide any documentation for financial need. That's not part of our process.
All right.
They'll have to, for their first visit, have to fill out an basic information intake form.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be put into our database.
Mm-hmm.
And then any other time that they visit the Hawk's Nest, they mm-hmm. won't have to fill out anything else.
All right.
They'll receive like a loyalty card.
All right. Okay.
And they'll be checked in.
All right. Like is there a limit as to how much they can get at any one time?
No.
Okay.
And they'll be able also be able to take a bag home if they like a we'll have reusable shopping bags.
Ah, very let's be environmental friendly. Okay. I see you have some notes there. What were some of the things that you wanted to share with us about the Hawk's Nest?
Like the donating to the Hawk's Nest,
mm-hmm.
Monetary donations will be also solicited.
Mm-hmm.
Checks and money orders are made payable to the HFC Foundation
mm-hmm.
And could be accepted either at the Student Activities Office or in the athletic.
Okay. Building. All right. If the people, is there a website or a telephone number that the audience can you know, use in order to contact to get additional more information about the Hawk's Nest?
If you like more information about the Hawk's Nest,
Mm-hmm.
You can either contact Rochelle Taylor,
mm-hmm.
Or myself.
Okay.
There will be official information on our site forthcoming.
Okay.
And a telephone number for the Hawk's Nest.
All right. Okay. So all that is still in the... So really, the Hawk's Nest is very much in the final phase of implementing the program. Is this correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Right now, I'm the only employee.
All right.
And the actual place where we're located has been... has been vacant for a couple years now.
Oh, all right.
And they're doing some repairs right. to the actual site, so it'll be up and ready okay. for the grand opening.
Okay. Now, and you've been involved for a month. You are part of what you've been doing is going and presenting to the different student bodies, the leadership council, the student council. What other student bodies have you, or where else have you made your presentations?
So the student athletes, and I've also talked to the student clubs,
mm-hmm.
and also want to get the honors program involved because they have to have so many hours for community service.
All right.
And that could be a potential where they can receive those hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be making a presentation to them. And we also want to get the staff involved.
Okay.
And setting up for helping out for donating and things like that.
Okay. For as a learning experience, because you're a student here at Henry Ford, what is your major?
Community leadership.
Community leadership. Okay. What do you see as some of the benefits of students being involved in this type of project?
Service to one another is really important to me.
Okay.
Being my major, I want to devote my life to public service, and I think getting involved in the community and taking initiative and helping provide solutions to the problems like this is mm-hmm. Is really important, and not doing it at this level and continuing on.
Okay, now you earlier in the interview you were talking about that this is a problem. Can you give us a little more idea when you say this is a problem? What are we talking about?
When you have students who are in this food crisis, who don't have food,
mm-hmm.
it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the college is, I think, is in the right direction of starting this. This isn't going to solve the, the whole food insecurity issue,
mm-hmm.
But I think having the option of having some food is a human right.
All right.
Hunger is definitely a community issue.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, it's deemed a personal or family issue,
mm-hmm.
but the impact of hunger on the health and economic potential of people and affects their quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Affects everyone in the community, actually.
All right.
Poverty and hunger go hand in hand.
All right.
As do poverty and poor health, and it also affects academic performance and attendance and a lot of other issues.
All right. This endeavor is going to be new. All right, and I think that as you meet with other organizations, other schools that have already implemented this, is there a way of looking at where their people might try to take advantage of a free service, and then there, using up something where, or make it so that later on it might be not people who really need it are not getting it.
I don't think that'll be an issue. What we saw other campuses, students not. Feeling ashamed and not mm-hmm. wanting to utilize that service.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our initial task is letting students who really need the service know that we're going to keep them, uphold their dignity,
mm-hmm.
and let them know that we're there for them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the campuses, a lot of students who really need the services
mm-hmm.
Don't want to utilize it. So we just want to kind of dispel that stigma that's associated with students who need to utilize the food assistance
all
that
right.
way.
Okay. Personally, you know, you said you're part of community leadership, okay, is your major. Where do you see this going, this kind of project going? How, you know, as far as being an impact?
I see this only expanding and getting bigger, mm-hmm. Working with other organizations in the community, ideas for potential fundraisers and other additional funding sources such as grants and moving that kind of, and also also being able to provide other than just food, but our personal care items.
Mm-hmm.
I just see it only getting bigger. This is only the beginning. And this is a great time for any of the student leaders or students to really get involved in this, be part of this legacy of this.
Okay. What about the community? How would they be involved with this?
The community can also volunteer or donate.
Mm-hmm. Donate what?
Either monetary donations or cans, food and non-perishable items.
Would they be able to work in the food pantry, or is this one going to be something that where it's only student operated?
They'll probably be able to. They can volunteer.
All right. Yeah, okay. So there is community persons can come and work within the pantry to make sure so they can, you know, as an operation that will be open to them as well?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And if I understood you correctly, we are getting this very new, and so this is part of getting this out into the community, is correct?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to be asking you later we're going to try and identify contact information, so who, you know, if people had questions, how they would go about doing this. Okay, so why don't you give them your name again?
Harrison Shelby.
Okay.
I'm the team leader for the Hawk's Nest.
Okay. All right.
Just want to last closing remark is just want to say that food is an essential. It's not a luxury,
mm-hmm.
and that we cannot just sit back and watch our students be hungry.
Mm-hmm.
This is an epidemic in which we can win,
mm-hmm.
and we will win,
mm-hmm.
when food is available in our food pantry,
mm-hmm.
and we will maintain their integrity and we maintain it with integrity, respect, and uphold their dignity, and hunger stops here.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hey, this is Andy from the Dives. I just wanted to say happy anniversary to WHFR. Congratulations on 30 years.
Woo!
Woo-hoo!
This is your boy Baby B coming to you live from the house party Mondays from 2 to 4, wishing you and yours best holiday wishes.
This is WHFR Dearborn.
Yo, guys and dolls, you're here at the Malt Shop with Daddy G here on WHFR Dearborn. And I'm gonna spin the platters and you can do the dancing. So I'll hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the Malt Shop. And here we are, back in the 50s.
He don't love you. Like I love you. If he